Last week I suggested that mindfulness practice has two elements. And one is presence, and the other is, I don't know if I said what the other one was, but the other I'll call today clear comprehension, recognition. So presence by itself can be intelligent, and when we're kind of grounded in a sense of presence, it's quite, could be quite powerful, quite wonderful. And there could at times be an innate intelligence, an innate wisdom and compassion that can flow out of that sense of being grounded in presence. And a lot of spiritual life sometimes has to do with discovering how to live in a sense of presence, being in the present moment, certainly, but presence is more than just being in the present moment. Even criminals can be in the present moment while they're robbing the bank. But maybe they're not very, you know, the sense of presence is not the same. And then the other side is that of our ability to use our capacity for understanding, for cognition, for comprehension, for analysis, for other kind of capacities of the mind. And when the Buddha talked about mindfulness in the mindfulness discourse, he used a compound word, a very long word, which sometimes the fact that it was a compound gets lost in the translations. The word is sati sampajana. And sati is the word for mindfulness, and sampajana is the word for what I'm calling here now clear comprehension. The act of comprehending what's going on. And comprehension is not just passive, not just something, oh, now I understand. But comprehension involves engaging in a topic with our powers of reflection so we understand in a deeper way. And when we emphasize presence, resting in presence, it's much more receptive, somewhat passive, somewhat... nothing's required of us except kind of resting or dissolving into a sense of presence. But when we talk about clear comprehension, then in a sense it requires something of us, kind of a certain kind of energetic involvement with what's happening in the present moment, considering it more carefully. Some people don't like to think of meditation practice or spiritual practices involving requiring something of us. They'd rather have kind of the lazy person's approach to spiritual life. There's even a book out. It was published 30 years ago or so. A Lazy Man's Guide to Enlightenment. And I think it's actually a nice book. And someone who really liked the book went and visited the guy who wrote it. He lives in Santa Cruz. And why was that the cause of laughter? Today's subject is that other half of mindfulness practice, the sampajana, the clear comprehension. And when I had started having children, I have two now, I was surprised. One of the surprises of it was to realize that I had cultivated an ability to be present, an ability to let go relatively well. And for example, endless retreats, I've been in, you know, probably years worth of retreats, if I add it all up, you know, sitting there. And I could really learn how to be really present. And things arise in my mind, I get distracted, I get conflict, I have problems. And you let go, let go, let go in a sense, or see through it, and come back to the sense of presence. Just be there. And it was glorious. So I kind of assumed that you could do that with kids. You know, just let go and just be there. You know, just be there and just let go and be present. And certainly that's been really important in parenting. But the surprise to me is that it's not enough. That I have to use all my intelligence. I have to kind of try to understand the situation and what's going on. Each situation, each day is different. You think you figured it out finally. And then the kids change, they grow. You know, something, I don't know what happens to these kids, but they change. And then you have to kind of understand the situation all anew, understand what the needs are, what the situation, what the capacities are. And then you have to kind of understand what the consequences are. We teach kids consequences, but we have to understand the consequences. And if I do X with the kid, then that's going to happen down the line. And so you have to have some sense of what's possible in the future. This, you know, if I do this, then that's more likely to happen. Or have a sense of vision. Oh, this child is capable of this, or in a year or a week is capable of this. And so we have to have some sense of vision of what's possible, and then also have that vision in mind, and the choices are made in the moment, here and now. And one of the horrible experiences of parenting for me was, I find it challenging to parent difficult children. And so sometimes I use a strong voice, thinking that you can get his attention and say, no, you can't do that. But in kind of very strong voice. And got the point across, and, you know, sometimes occasionally seems like maybe it's the right thing to do. And then to discover that my son, older son, now uses the same voice on his younger son, younger brother. Oh no! Where did he learn that? He doesn't understand the context. He doesn't understand the situation when it's appropriate. You know, he doesn't have a wise comprehension like I have, and he now uses it indiscriminately. And so what I've, you know, so certainly in parenting I've had to learn that more is needed than just presence, at least for me. Maybe there are other people who have some innate capacity of understanding how to raise kids, but I haven't met them yet. So I think it's actually true in much of life, is that life requires action, it requires choices, and so how do we engage in the choices we make? How do we engage in the action, the activity of life, when life requires more of us than just simply being, I don't want to say simply, more than being present, more than having a strong sense of presence in what we do? The wonderful thing about presence is that it's a foundation for being able to make wise choices in our daily life, in our life. But then, you know, how do we make that, you know, what's that, how do we make those choices? What's the reflective engagement that we have in life? So the word sampajana in Pali is usually translated as clear comprehension. And then there's a list of four different forms of clear comprehension, four ways of being reflective or comprehending a situation in a more thorough or deeper way. And the first form of comprehension in Pali is called gochara. And gochara, gochara means a cow. And chara means where they go. And it's a Pali word for pasture. So understanding the proper pasture, comprehending your pasture. And what this means in the Buddhist language is, in Buddhism, is that understanding the proper domain or the pasture where you're going to get nourished and fed, the appropriate pasture to be dwelling in your mindfulness and your presence and your activity. And it's not always so clear where the appropriate pasture is, where we get nourished. I know that if we spend a lot of time planning, anxiously planning, thinking about the future, you're probably not getting nourished. It's probably not a very, you know, it's probably eating a lot of weeds then, you know, noxious weeds. It's not a good pasture to be in. If you spend a lot of time remembering the past, or a lot of time fantasizing, it's not a very, you know, in the long term, it's not a very nourishing pasture to be in. If you spend a lot of time caught up in greed, that feeds you in certain ways, certain kind of food, it's junk food. If you spend a lot of time with hate, it's certain kind of, you know, against junk food for the mind. It's not very helpful for the mind. You're not getting nourished in a proper way. So what's the proper domain of where to reside, where to have their mindfulness and their presence? And that's a huge part of clear comprehension, understanding where the proper place is to keep our precious attention, our precious presence, our precious engagement with life. If you watch your mind in meditation, for example, most people can find that the mind has a tendency to get caught in certain trains of thought. And not just in trains, and sometimes get lost in them, but even if you're not lost in them, there can be, you can get, there can be a lot of force, a lot of energy in picking up certain concerns and thoughts, even if you're kind of aware of it. Some people, it's a big transition in meditation practice to realize that the difference between engaging in an active way or clinging way or forceful way with our thinking versus being very relaxed about thinking, kind of very spacious, and the mind's not really that interested in thinking. The interest is not there, the fascination with thinking is not there, the sense of desperation around thinking is not there, the sense of thinking is going to solve it and do it for me. And it's going to be very, very, you still might be thinking, but it's very spacious, very relaxed, like easy come, easy go, you know, I'm not really paying, you know, not the interest in what I'm thinking about. It kind of floats around there like lazy clouds in the background. And to realize that when we're gripped by thought, that are caught very strongly with it, that's in a sense a choice the mind is making. You may not feel it's your choice, but it's a choice it's making. It doesn't have to be that way. So where do you want to keep? Where do you want your presence to be? The life energy you have. Where should it be? Part of this clear comprehension of the pasture is the pasture or the domain of mindfulness. Where should mindfulness be? And so one of the key things is mindfulness should be in the present moment. And mindfulness unfolds in the present moment. The present moment should be palpable. If we have to think about the future, which sometimes we have to do, can the sense of thinking about the future include a palpable sense of being here and now in the present moment? But more than just in the present moment, what's the proper domain or the pasture for mindfulness, for presence? And that varies a little bit depending on what's going on. So part of clear comprehension is knowing where the attention should be. And different times it should be in different places, and there should be a flexibility in attention to be able to move between different domains, different pastures, depending on what is needed at a given time. There's a story of a, can be told from any tradition, but I heard it, I think, from a, I don't know, Jewish or Christian tradition story of, I think it was the son of a rabbi who was sitting meditating or in prayer and was absorbed in his prayer when the rabbi came home, and the younger baby was crying nearby. And the rabbi said, "You know, what's going on here? The baby's crying. Why don't you take care of him?" And the son said, the older son said, "Oh, I was absorbed in my prayer." And the son reprimands, the father reprimands the praying son and says, "If you're really praying, you would notice even a fly on the wall. You'd really be present for this life. You'd notice what's going on." So sometimes to get absorbed in a particular way and not know what's happening around you, the context, is you know, not being flexible. I mean, sometimes you put blinders on when that happens. So sometimes the situation requires a very broad awareness. Sometimes our attention needs to be in the person we're talking with. Sometimes that person has a great need, and so the proper domain of mindfulness maybe is to really be there for that person, but not to the exclusion of knowing what's happening here, what's happening with oneself. We can get lost in the other person, but sometimes we need to kind of know that part of the presence should be here, know, to be able to track the motivations we have, the reactions we have, the thoughts we have, the speech that we do, the actions we make. So it has some sense of here. This is an important place to be. Sometimes it's appropriate to turn most of our attention, all of our attention, into our body and be present for our bodily experience and just explore that, be really present. Some people are estranged from their body, and so learning to go into the body and feel it is a very important part of that nourishment of mindfulness. Sometimes what's important to pay attention to is our beliefs, our cognition, what's going on in our mind, our assumptions. And so sometimes it's important then to be able to have to turn the attention to that particular domain or pasture, that of the mind. What's going on there? What am I thinking? What am I believing? Sometimes it's our feelings which are important. And the feelings, somehow the situation has evoked a lot of strong reactions or feelings. And maybe rather than understanding the thoughts around the situation, we need to understand what's going on emotionally. So then the domain of mindfulness in the present moment is here, is in our emotional body, feeling the emotions. So at different times, different situations, mindfulness will center on different pastures and to look at and see this is what's going on here now. And I know some people who meditate can get very good at certain pastures and have ignored other pastures. And having only one diet is not, sometimes not a very good idea. So part of the mindfulness practice is to learn to have the capacity to look at all the pastures, the appropriate pastures, to look at the body, to look at the feelings, to look at the states of the mind, to look at the activities of the mind, what's going on there. The fullness of who we are as human beings. So in any situation you find yourself, you can ask, what needs my attention now? Where should my attention be? And just to have that question can be very helpful in disentangling a little bit from the ways in which we're caught by a situation or reacting to a situation. We might be very reactive, and just ask a question, where's my attention? Where should my attention be right now? Means you're stepping out of the reactivity for a moment, kind of, getting your head out of the water. Is that the expression a little bit? It's in order to see more clearly what's going on. Where does my attention need to be? So that's the first kind of reflective act or clear comprehension. Clear comprehension of where our attention needs to be. The appropriate pasture. The second reflection or clear comprehension is clear comprehension of purpose. And purpose, I suppose, is similar to clear comprehension of having a vision of a goal, of what's possible, or the direction we're going. And so a clear comprehension of purpose, I remember when, many years ago, I was going to move clothes from the washer to the dryer. And I had to cross the house, the apartment where I lived, to do that. So that was my purpose, was to go and move the clothes from the washer to the dryer. And I noticed after a while that I hadn't gotten there. That I had all these other things on the way. And this very simple purpose, to do the laundry, got sidetracked by all these other things that goes on. And so, to have a sense of a purpose, many people have a sense of purpose, and then is there follow-through? Some people don't have a sense of purpose, or they have a mild sense of purpose or a superficial sense of purpose. My sense of purpose is just to cope with life and get through the day. Sometimes parenting feels that way. I know they're going to change. I know they're going to change. So clear comprehension of the purpose. A very interesting question when you want to do something, or someone asks you to do something, you can ask, for what purpose am I going to do this? And sometimes the purpose is recreation, or sometimes the purpose is relaxation, and sometimes it can be other purpose. Have a clear sense of the purpose of why you're doing something. It helps to live a conscious life, a purposeful life. I believe that Buddhism is encouraging people to live a purposeful life. So when we live, we're doing it with some sense of, it has a purpose, it has a goal, there's a vision that it's connected to. And strictly in Buddhism, the person who has no purpose is a person who's fully awakened. Because the ultimate purpose is to be awakened, and when you're fully awakened, there's no need for purpose. But even the awakened person can have purposes, because if the person has kids, deal with that. What's the purpose there? What's the vision? What's the vision of what's possible? Part of purpose is to have a sense of what's possible, our potential. And if a person's never engaged in a spiritual life, never engaged in meditation, they probably have a very little sense of the vision of what's possible in terms of purifying the heart, the mind, what's possible in terms of connecting to a sense of sacredness or a sense of liberation or freedom. As people begin to do spiritual practice, sometimes it begins to dawn on them. They get a taste or a touch of what's possible, a vision. And sometimes it can be kind of like there could be a temporary kind of clear opening up of the curtains, and you have a clear view out and say, wow, I'm not there yet, but now I really see what's possible. And in Buddhist practice, part of that, there can be a variety of things, but often we point to the possibility of freedom, a kind of a great sense of freedom, of clarity, of wakefulness that where there's no clinging, there's no constrictions, no contractions on the heart or the mind. The mind has no boundaries, no barriers. There's no limitations to it. It's a limitless kind of sense of presence, perhaps. And so that can be a sense that can grow as a sense of purpose or sense of goal or direction. Have a sense of direction. This is my. I'm going there. This is my direction. It's easy to strive. It's easy to get contracted or have unhealthy relationships to a goal. So much so that some people, some teachers will emphasize, don't have any goals, because you can just get in trouble. But having a sense of purpose or direction can be very helpful. But the way it's held, or I think my understanding, or I'll say it this way, one way that the Theravada tradition talks about holding a direction, especially going towards liberation, it says, incline the mind, incline the heart in the direction of freedom. So that's very, inclining has a very different flavor than, you know, enlightenment or bust. You know, like, I'm going to do this. It's like, I'm lean in that direction. You know, and if you lean in that direction, you'll fall. You know, eventually it'll happen. You'll kind of go in that direction. So to me, that's much more kind of peaceful, kind of relaxed approach, but still inclining, still having a sense of direction and leaning in that direction, making that choice. So in all circumstances in life, I think, in all actions and choices we can make, we have to make, we can ask the question, for what purpose am I doing this? Sometimes it's interesting to ask that question and then and have an answer and then say, but yes, this is fine, but is there a deeper purpose to doing this? So something simple as like going to the market to buy food. You know, why? What's the purpose of buying food? Going to the market to buy food because the refrigerator is empty. That's a sense of, you know, that could be your purpose. If you leave it at that, you're kind of scratching the surface. What's the deeper purpose of going to the market to go shopping? Maybe it's connected to, well, I have some kind of, you know, I have some candy bars at home. I could have eaten that. But the sense of purpose here is, I think, really helpful for me and for the world around me if I eat the healthy way. So I'm going to go and buy salad, buy lettuce, and make a nice, healthy salad. And so it's not just simply buy food, but the sense of purpose is to go and get something which is nourishing in a deeper way. Or perhaps you have friends coming over for dinner. And so going to the market to buy food is connected to really wanting to be a gracious host, a good host, to really feed them well and make them feel kind of as welcomed guests when they come to your house. Or I can imagine a variety of different purposes a person can garner, find out of going to the market. And I've many times gone to the market without thinking about it. I'm given a list. You know, go get this stuff. And I found it very helpful to spend some time reflecting on the intention, the motivation, about why I want to do something, why I want to do it. And sometimes, if I take the time to reflect that, I can find that if I feel my heart, my values more deeply, I can find deeper values and purposes to fuel that action, be behind the activities I choose to do. Choosing, even if you do the same activity, go to the market, so it looks the same, and the action looks the same, but it's fueled by a different sense of purpose, that makes a difference in our lives. If it's fueled by wanting to be a gracious host, be a generous host, or to be a nourishing host, for example, that's very different than a sense of duty and obligation. Oh, I gotta have this list, I don't really want to do it, but you know, I don't want my wife angry with me, so I'll just go do it. So the motivation is to avoid unpleasant consequences. There's a very different result depending on what's actually motivating the activity we do. So clear comprehension involves taking time to reflect. What is the sense of purpose? What's the motivation behind what I want to do? What's the direction I want to set my life in? That can be done in the small details of our life, and it needs to be done, I think, if a person is involved in Buddhist practice, it needs to be involved in the big areas of one's life, to really take some time. Go to the beach one day by yourself and walk the beach and think about your life and what's really important for your life and what you want the direction of your life to be. to live a conscious life It involves taking some time really thinking about what's really valuable and important for us, and not just getting by. Not just getting by. And many teachers will say, don't fall into the trap of putting it off. Oh, I have all this stuff I have to do, and when I retire, then I'll really think about these things and engage. Or when the kids grow up, or when I get that promotion, or when I finish my education, or putting things off. But to actually spend some time, serious time with oneself, and what's really important and valuable. Part of clear comprehension of purpose can involve having discussions with friends, exploring it with friends and saying, let's talk a little bit about my sense of purpose, my sense of direction and vision that I have for my life. So it can happen in big issues and small issues. It can happen in meditation practice. To have a sense of vision or purpose in meditation practice. Some people have no purpose at all. They just sit down, which is okay at times. Some people can have a sense of purpose. Yes, I'm going to sit here, and it's important for me to somehow let go of my preoccupations. And that's a sense of purpose. I'm realizing I'm so preoccupied that it's actually unhealthy for me to be caught up in the way that I'm caught up, or to have these feelings that I'm caught with, the rage that I'm caught with. It's unhealthy for me. I'm getting sick. Something else is needed here. My sense of purpose is to sit in such a way I can let go of my rage and discover some sense of calm. If you know what your sense of purpose is, then you can ask the next question. There's the next area of clear comprehension. And that's clear comprehension of suitability. So the first is a clear comprehension of your posture. The second is clear comprehension of purpose. Now the third one is clear comprehension of suitability, of what's suitable. And here in Buddhism we talk about skillful means. What is a skillful means? What's the appropriate way of following through on that sense of purpose? If you're struggling with rage or struggling with addiction issue, perhaps you have a sense that meditation can help. And so you get some instructions and you find this is a suitable approach, is to meditate. Maybe you try it for a while and you realize that sometimes it's not suitable. Sometimes meditation is counterindicated. And sometimes maybe just you get more filled with rage. And so maybe what you need rather than meditating, maybe this, what's suitable to deal with your rage is to go walk on the beach. Take a long walk, far from people. And get angry with the ocean for a while. It doesn't mind. And so what's suitable given the sense of purpose and given the circumstances you're in right now, the situation you find yourself in? When you sit down to meditate, and I'm going to say, I have this great, sense of purpose. I'm going to be awake. I'm going to abide in the awakened nature. My true nature is awakening. I'm going to abide in my true nature. And I'm going to sit here and just be. That could be great if you can do it. But maybe what's really going on is your mind is going at 1,000 miles an hour. And every time you try to just sit and just be, there's no letting up on this very, very busy mind. Maybe what's needed, what's suitable, is not just resting in a sense of being or awakened nature, but rather what's suitable, not given the nature of your mind, is to turn the attention and really look at the thinking mind itself. Look at the tension that's there. Look at the tightness of there. Look at the energetic qualities of that thinking mind. Look at the emotions and feelings that are connected to that thinking. You need to really kind of look very honestly at what's actually going on. That's what's suitable given what's happening with you. So there has to be some sense of what's suitable, what's appropriate thing to do right now. This is the sense of purpose I have. Is what I want to do suitable and appropriate at this time, this situation, and with this the person that I am right now? So that takes some analysis, some thinking. And it's a little bit unfortunate that some of spiritual life involves reflection and thinking, because it's hard to know what's right. It's hard to be completely wise and know all the circumstances. So part of this, for me, has been a sense of trial and error. We do the best, we consider the best we can, We have a sense of purpose, direction. We have a sense of figuring out what best guess, what's suitable here. And we try it. And then we learn from what doesn't. Trial and error means we learn from our mistakes. We learn from our errors. And I think that if a person's going to do a meditation practice, like mindfulness, it's really helpful to have a sense of the spirit of trial and error. And that means that you're going to have some error. Baseball is really big in my house these days, so yeah, maybe you understand why I have baseball analogies. But it's said that baseball is really good to teach people failure, because mostly it's about failure. You know, the batting average of really good batters is they fail one third of the time they're at bat. Two-thirds? They fail. Two-thirds, that's right. Two-thirds. Thank you. Two-thirds. Two-thirds failure rate. You know, and there's lots of batters who aren't even really good batters who are still professional ball players, right? They fail four-fifths of the time they're up at bat. They don't connect to the ball. So baseball teaches failure, but you keep trying, right? So the sense of trial and error in meditation. Oh, I tried this; it didn't seem to quite work. I need to adjust a little bit here. Maybe I stayed a little bit too long, you know, with my breath. What I really need to do was to be a little bit. Maybe I tried too hard here; it's too much energy. Maybe I was too relaxed. I thought meditation was about relaxing and being calm, and I just kind of put myself to sleep. I think that was too much. So I've learned from that. Okay, tomorrow when I meditate, I think I'm not going to be that calm. I'm not going to just kind of linger in my breath and kind of soothe myself as I meditate. Each out-breath, soothe, calm. Ah. You know, that, you know, I learned. I tried that. It didn't quite work. Or maybe some people find that a mental noting is really helpful. And and some people find mental noting is not helpful. So you try things out, try different things. Some people find that if they try something new out every 5 minutes, it doesn't really help their meditation. And I think most people will sooner or later have that problem of having too many techniques, having learned too much, and then, you know, sitting 2 minutes and not in samadhi yet, and then I'll try something else, this and that. So that didn't work. So I think next time I meditate, I think I'm going to need to just try one thing for that period of meditation, or maybe one thing for a week, or one thing for a month, and just kind of. Sometimes it takes a while to kind of get the hang of it and learn something and kind of work out the kinks in it before it really kind of clicks and works. So sometimes you have to hang in there. So having some sense of what's suitable, of what's skillful, what's useful, having some sense. Part of suitability is having some sense of what it takes to follow through. It's, you know, if you're going to learn a skill, any kind of skill, what's suitable is a lot of repetition. It takes repetition. So no, that's part of the what's appropriate is repeating and repeating and repeating, and then slowly you kind of learn. The fourth, so now we covered three, posture, purpose, and suitability. The fourth clear comprehension is clear comprehension of non-delusion. And the non-delusion is basically synonymous with wisdom. So be able to see with wisdom. And this is kind of having a certain kind of eye that can see, not just be present for things, but see more deeply what is actually going on here. What is the nature of what I'm looking at and what's present for? Some of this has to do with oddly enough, for me, clear comprehension of non-delusion means non-delusive comprehension of delusion. to have the ability to see delusion when it arises. To have the ability to see that we're holding on to something, holding on to the experience of the moment, holding on to something, or clear understanding that we have resistance or we have aversion or pushing away. Clear comprehension of the attachment in the mind, and to see all. Or sometimes clear comprehension of projection. Sometimes I can see that when I look at someone, I'm not really seeing that person. I'm seeing my assumptions of who that person is. I'm seeing ideas. And I feel really lucky when I see that, because then I can kind of look behind those, around those ideas, and try to see the person for who they are. So part of clear comprehension of non-delusion is to see delusion and not be deluded by it. Oh, this is what's going on. I've had a fair amount of luck. Maybe I shouldn't pat myself on the back, but I feel a fair amount of luck this weekend, this last few couple of days with my kids, because of staying equanimous and staying patient, just being very present for difficult situations. And I find, you know, all kinds of things difficult. I find the amount of time my son takes to brush his teeth difficult. Now, I'm sure, you know, that's ridiculous. But I don't know why he takes so long. But, you know, there's a lot of preparation and a lot of exploration, a lot of stuff that has to happen around the sink and this and that. And now I could just, you know, get angry, or I could just, you know, get to the point. You know, brush your teeth. That's the purpose here. But, you know, he's not really, I don't think he's doing it to cause problems for me. I don't think he's, you know, making a point. I don't think he's kind of dragging it out for some kind of sadistic purposes. He's just, you know, a 7-year-old who's kind of like there, very present, and there's a lot going on there in the sink. He's very present. And so I can watch my impatience arise. But I've been relatively lucky to stay equanimous, see, or peaceful, or spacious, or very present. Oh, look, there's Gil's impatience is arising, okay? There's no need to pick it up. No need to do anything with it. I'll stay in the pasture of being calm or being spacious. I'm not interested in my impatience. It's not suitable for him, it's not suitable for me, it's not interesting, it's painful, it's bad, junk food. I'm not repressing it. I'm just like, oh, I'm not picking it up. There it is. So that's a clear comprehension of non-delusion, or, you know, one aspect of it, the clear comprehension that delusion is delusion. That's part of clear comprehension of non-delusion. To be able to watch, you know, the clinging that arises and say, oh, I don't think I'll follow that, or maybe I'll let go of that, I don't have to do that. Another aspect of clear comprehension of non-delusion, which is a very important reference point in the Buddhist life, is to have a sense of a mind which is clear, a mind which is seeing clearly, in particular a mind or heart which is not contracted, not tight, that is free. To have a sense of freedom, of liberation, of freedom. And that can be either an immediate sense of freedom that's right here and now, or it could have something we've had in the past, some experience, and that becomes a reference point for our lives. This is possible. To have a sense of how close freedom might be in this very moment. And to find value, palpable value, in being free. When I'm sitting there next, you know, in the sink, in the bathroom, my son brushing his teeth, it's been palpable for me, the sense of freedom, my own freedom, the peace that's right here in this psyche, in this mind, in this presence. And so it's not just simply a matter of seeing my impatience come up and not being fooled by it, not being caught by it, but it's also having a sense that there's something really wonderful happening here also, something that's very restful, something that is very, has a lot of integrity and value, authenticity, and it's palpable. So it's not just kind of just choosing not to pick something up because it's painful. It's actually knowing something a lot better. So clear comprehension of our pasture, clear comprehension of a sense of purpose or direction, which also involves a clear comprehension of consequences, clear comprehension of suitability, what's suitable, what gets me there, what doesn't get me there. clear comprehension of non-delusion. The trap with talking about the clear comprehension is that a person can spend all their time thinking. What's the purpose? What should I do? What's suitable here? And hopefully clear comprehension is self-correcting. And we realize, you know, I'm just spinning my wheels. I'm just thinking a lot here. Endlessly thinking and wondering and caught up. I think what I need to do is to come back a little bit. Forget about all that's thinking about things and reflecting on them and comprehending. I think I just need to be really simple for a while and just come back to presence. Rest in presence. Establish myself in presence. Just relax, be present in a very simple way. Let the mind just kind of go. And then later, when the mind is clear or calmer, more relaxed, then maybe it's, or maybe after meditation, when you go to the beach for a walk, or, you know, sit and have a cup of tea or something, then you can do some of the reflective work, the clear comprehension work. So two sides to mindfulness, presence and clear comprehension. So, I hope that was, today's talk was for the right purpose and it was suitable for the occasion. Thank you.